This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Hello, Marilyn.
Yeah.
Hey, great. I've been getting, as I said before, I've been getting updates about Barrier Lake for a little while, and just the other day I was reading about a roadblock that was taken apart rather violently. And I'm wondering if, I feel like what's going on up in your community, a lot of news hasn't really made it down here in southern Ontario, and I'd like to try to change that. So I'm wondering if you can share with listeners, introduce us to what is going on in your community, and from there we can talk about what happened just the other day.
All right. First of all, my name is Marilyn Pugsic from Barrier Lake. I'm one of the youth spokespersons for our community. And it's been a while now that we've been struggling with the government not honoring their agreements they have signed with our community. And just a couple of days ago, yesterday on Monday morning, we started really early to take over the highway on 117. It was a peaceful demonstration. It was a nonviolent action, and there was about 100 of community members that came out, and about 20 non-native supporters from Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa. And there was a lot of tension going on during that blockade. So I guess we've got an answer, which was the government's sending in a riot team instead of sending a negotiator to come back to the table to start up those outstanding issues that have been neglected, by the federal and the provincial governments. And one of them is the trilateral agreement, which is an agreement that could sustain the things that we want, the economic development to be included in that, and the other thing was the resource revenue sharing that was part of it, because right now annually they're extracting $100 million a year off our territories, and Barrier Lake doesn't receive anything, and they told us to get off that highway, or they would send in policemen from Montreal. So they send in about more than two dozen of riot squads, and they use tear gas on us over there to try and get us out of the highway. And there was kids there, children, small children, babies, and everybody was all the kids were practically running for their lives. They thought. They thought we were being shot at. It was very shocking for the little ones. And that's what they did. They didn't want any media to come on site. Apparently, because they said that we were too dangerous. But I guess the real danger was coming from the riot and the police officers. So that's what went on during that more than 24 hours, 24 hours about, I should say, not even. It ended around 9 o'clock in the evening, so it was less than 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've been facing here in the community.
Yeah. Can you talk a bit more about, just how long this goes back with your community? I understand that there's been problems for many, many years.
Yeah, well, there's in 1991, they have signed an agreement with the federal for the trilateral agreement that would give us a say in the management of the territories and to help to preserve the forest and the wildlife, you know, the habitat. And then in 1996, the Indian Affairs interfered within our leadership customs, within our internal affairs, by recognizing a minority faction within the community that doesn't reside on the community. So they recognized this group of people, and they allocated in Maniwaki because they were not representing the community at that time. And all the fundings were cut off in 1996. There was no hydro. There was no running water. There was no services at all. For a year and a half, there was no school. But they had put a third-party management in place during that time, and they were kind of running all the programs and services without the say of the community. And then so they kind of ousted the legitimate council back then, so which is the same thing what we're facing again today. And then again, this is the third time in 12 years that Indian Affairs has interfered in our internal issues within our governance structure, because we have a customary governance code that we follow, which is we select our chief and councils under a traditional, a very old traditional custom that we used. We don't follow the voting system, you know, under elections.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what our custom is, and they have violated this minority group of people again in 2001, alongside with the governments have interfered again in 2001, and again this year, 2008, in February. So it's the third time that Indian Affairs has interfered by recognizing a minority faction as the leadership when the majority is here, you know, in the community. And we've been struggling with that kind of interference, and we're trying to finish the negotiations with that trilateral agreement. So it's been a long struggle. It's been going on for more than 20 years now. And I remember I was small, you know, a little girl, fighting for this, and here I am today, you know, and my kids, and I have my kids today, and I know, I don't know when this fighting is going to end, and we're not asking much. It's a very simple, reasonable demand that we're asking, you know. It's to protect what is out there that's been left from our ancestors, eh? Which mm-hmm. is the land, you know, our culture, the language, and the habitats of the wildlife that we feed off of. These are the things that we want to protect, which is the things that are in the trilateral agreement. And then in March, when they have formed that again interference in March, we had there was a checkpoint here at the community where we were saying we didn't want these four individuals in the community creating disharmony in our community. And these four individuals were told not to come back in the community anymore. And we had created a checkpoint, but again, the SQ riot were called upon that time to try and lock us in our houses, basically, so these new selected chief and council could be implemented, so they could resume normal duties, I guess, but it wasn't. This is the minority that didn't follow the governance code, you know, and so that's the same thing what happened in 2001. It's been a long battle, and in March, like I was saying, when they sent in the riot team, they sent in about a dozen, and they were pepper spraying our kids, you know, pushing the elders, and they've arrested about 15 people at that time, between 10 to 15 people, and many charges are still pending from the action in March. And we were pretty much pushed aside by the SQ and the riot. So this new selected chief and council would come back in the community. And it's the same thing again, what happened a couple of days ago. You know, we had, it was a very peaceful event, and again they send in the same riot team, basically, and except with numbers this time, and threw us off, practically pushed us off the highway, and walked in the community with us. So we walked about a kilometer in the community, being pushed by the riot squad. So there's a lot of pictures right now of that action that went on. It's on the internet. It's on the Barrier Lake Solidarity website, barrierlake.blogspot.com. That's a website we've created. And we have a lot of information on there about the agreements, you know, about the reports that's been made, and the action that we've been taking. Because we've been doing quite a bit. We've followed Cannon around, his campaigns. We've went to camp at Parliament Hill. And we did quite a number of direct actions. And this is the answer that we get, you know, by sending in a team, a riot team, instead of a negotiator, you know, which is a very simple demand, you know. And these agreements have been signed already. It's just for the implementation of these agreements.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why our community is struggling right now, too, because the governments can uphold their agreements.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a lot of the same stuff that's happened, you know, to so many Native communities, like just kind of kicking out your traditional leadership and imposing someone who will kind of do the job they want.
Yeah, right now our community is run under a third-party management system, which is a system that they use for like a third option, because the first option would be to manage ourselves, right? And then the second would be like the co-management, where there's someone from the community and someone from their office to co-manage all the issues that need to be dealt with in the community. And the third one would be the third-party management. And right now, we have no say in the community as to whatever goes on. And in the education system, there's no Algonquin that's been... there's no teachings at all of our culture and our language. And that was one of the other reasons early in last year when they started school in September, this third party management hired teachers, non-native teachers, to come and teach in the school. And we had created an education authority within the community for us, for the parents or the people, to have a say in the school, how the school can be run. But they brushed off this authority, and right now the only thing that's going on is the third party that's just running the school right now. And then September, when we were going to go meet the teachers, there was already parents there that were upset walking around at the school because they were told, our children were told not to speak their language. And these are the non-native teachers that that work at the school. And the parents were really upset. You know, we were upset because I have two kids in that elementary school myself. And these teachers told the kids not to speak their language. They took everything down in that school, the visuals that the kids would often see hanging on the wall or touch and feel or play with. All that stuff was taken down from that school. So we pulled out the students from there. The parents pulled out the kids because this was one of the most important thing we wanted in that school was to have to implement our culture and the language within that school curriculum. So this wasn't happening at all. Instead, it was reversal. And when we started telling our parents, like my dad, I was telling my dad, no, they're telling the kids not to speak their language. And he looked at me with a face that he was so shocked. And he said right away, just like what they did to us in residential school, he says. So it was a big shock to the community sort of thing. Because it was just bringing back memories, you know, some of them bad memories from what they had experienced in residential school. And they were reflecting that towards the school this year, and they couldn't believe it was still happening, you know, telling kids not to speak their language. If they spoke the language, they were going to be cut off from snacks or treats or whatever, good stuff or goodies that they have to do in school. So, and this is, one of them was my daughter, which was in grade one, in her class, and her teacher told her, you know, if you speak Algonquin, you're not going to get any treats. And they would send her to the principal office, you know, and from there, I guess they told her not to speak Algonquin in front of the teacher. So these are the things that we had faced with the school, eh? And we had opened up our own school, our own voluntary school. We have no funding right now for it. It's still in operation. We teach the language. We teach the cultural stuff. We bring them out to the bush. So everything we're doing in there is pretty much done in Algonquin. We teach some of the core subjects from the Quebec curriculums, but mostly in Algonquin. So there's five volunteer teachers in there right now with about 40 students. And in that third-party-run school, the federal school, there's about 30 staff with about 20 kids, not more than 25 kids. So, you know, and this is the kind of things that they're doing, you know, trying to... And it's just not right.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the other struggles is our school, which is one of the most important things in our community.
I'm wondering if, can you talk about what exactly are some of these projects, like this huge difference between the way, like the living conditions on your reserve community and all the huge resource extraction projects. Like, as I understand, there's some hydroelectric dams and some logging.
Yeah. Well, there's the hydro dam there, and the logging companies. There's the outfitters, the sports hunting. All these things that are being done within the traditional territories. And these are the ones that are being extracted, like the 100 million that I was seeing a year. This is where it's all coming from all these activities that's going on in the community.
Mm-hmm.
That's
And I'm wondering if also, if, like, I understand traditionally your community's territory would be like more than 17,000 square kilometers, and now you've, I guess it was 1961 I was reading, that you're forced onto a reserve.
Yeah.
Are you able to maybe put a bit of this current struggle in that context?
Yeah, we had, I forget which date exactly, but we were put in this reserve. It's 59 acres. When we own the land of more than 10,000 square kilometers. So right now there's SQs riding around in our community, in our 59-acre reserve, and if we were to do anything else out of this 59 acres, we'd have to deal with the SQ there, especially on this road, at the entrance of our road. And right now there's about 60 houses in the communities, and they haven't been renewed or repaired since like 20 years ago. And there's a lot of them that are molded and condemned. When there was a survey that was made on the houses in about 5 years ago, and most of those, probably like 80%. About 70% to 80% of those homes are condemned, and there's about up to 18 people living in a household. For that reason is why we have problems with social services, eh? Because they don't allow babies to come home because of the poor housing condition that we have. So some of the young parents today are forced to stay in town and get better homes because we're too overcrowded here, or either it's a run-down home, you know, it's not fit for the baby. So these are the things that the social services look at. And it's really bad, actually, because, you know, it's my... My sister is one of them, my sister-in-law. So they can't come back. And the other thing, too, in March when they were giving those arrests, when we made the checkpoint, that's the other thing I forgot to mention. There's this lady, my sister-in-law, again, she wasn't allowed to come back to the community once they have... set the charges on her, and she has two kids in the community with her boyfriend, but she cannot come back to the reserve because of obstruction of justice for trying to block these four individuals from coming in the community. And the other person is my husband, and he was cutting down the tree at a blockade at the entrance of our highway when we had that checkpoint. For cutting down a tree, he gets arrested, and he was sent to jail overnight. He passed court in the morning, and the judge ordered him not to come back in the community. You know, and it's not even a crime, you know. I don't think it's a crime. It was a very political situation, I think, you know, to be charged like that and not to be allowed to come back in the community. And we have five kids, eh? So I have a baby, and I have two small ones, and I have two that are in high school, two in elementary, two in high school, and I have a baby. So it was pretty hard for us. It was kind of hard for everybody because there was people getting sick from that, too much stress. And
yeah, it always sounds like those bail conditions can always serve as a way to just further break down people.
Yeah.
You know, like, it sounds like an awfully tough time.
Yeah, it's really hard right now, you know, for myself, for the community. You know, been putting up quite a bit of fight, and we're not about ready to give up because we know what is right and what is wrong, and we're here to defend, you know, what what has been left for us, you know, to live off of, how we live, to survive off of.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're doing today what we're doing. And it wasn't because to aggravate or to disturb, you know, the lives of the Canadians. This is not the point, you know. The point is we're getting our message, trying to get our message across, and to call on supporters, you know, to,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I guess to write to the ministers, to write to the governments, you know.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, like, thinking again of the fact that there's, you know, 500 people on a 59-acre reserve, like, I'm wondering what, like, to what extent is all the industrial operations around infringing on, like, food, like, animals, and to be able to hunt and gather and stuff like that?
Well, right now there's about 70 to 80, probably almost 90%, I should say, that the people are on welfare, you know. There's not too many jobs for us right now that are the defenders of the land, but the one that's working with third party, which is Casey Ratt, the newly selected chief, he's the one that's benefiting from this with his minority faction, because he doesn't represent the Barrier Lake, I should say. You know, he represents himself as the new elected puppet chief and council, I should say, and his few followers. And the majority, 90% of the people, is on welfare. So it's pretty hard. And we're living off a diesel generator, you know. That's, we don't have hydro in the community, but there's a lot of hydro actions throughout the territory. But we're not connected to the hydro grid, and we cannot build any more houses because that plant is too small. And we're pretty much living in crowded homes, you know.
And your
families are extending pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. So. And you were saying before, if you go out of the 59-acre reserve, there's just the SQ police all over, and it's not for like a free movement situation.
No, well, sometimes we get harassed by SQ officers on the road or on the highway. Sometimes for no reason at all, you know, just trying to get some answers to their questions when some people don't have that. So it's been pretty. Well, they're always here, you know, and always bothering the people when there's nothing going on.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if, Marilyn, if you can talk a bit about what's going on now, like, just in the wake of the road blockade, and also what other actions or plans you're taking, and maybe how people can help, too.
Okay. Well, we've been getting a lot of support calls and letters from all over Canada, but right now our blockade is gone. It's no more. And tonight we'll be at Lawrence Cannon's campaign at Kentley, in I guess it's near Gatineau or Hull. And then tomorrow night we'll be in Ottawa for the film screening and panel of the situation of our community from today and since the 1900s. So the 1990s, I mean, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be there for tomorrow night, and we'll still be following Cannon around until this election is until it's over. Because
mm-hmm.
right now Lawrence Cannon, he's the one that's he's the MP riding within the territory, and he has absolutely done nothing to try and work with the First Nations within his riding, especially our people, you know, which is Barrier Lake. And then so we're going to be there again, put more pressure on him so he could, put pressure on those governments, you know, he's working for or whatever, and to finish these outstanding issues with the community. So that's going to be our next plans. We're going to be doing a lot of nonviolent, more direct action. So, and for support, we're calling on those supporters to write to Cannon and Strahl. And we have all the information on the website. Like I was saying, the Bar Your Lake Solidarity website. It's baryourlakesolidarity@blogspot.com. And okay. There's a lot more information on that website that, for our community. So if all the listeners want to tune in on the internet, go to that website.
Thanks a lot, Mary Lynn.
Okay.
I really appreciate it.
I have to leave now because it's quite a few hours away to be in for that campaign.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much, and I really wish you the best.
Yeah, and thank you, and thanks for all the listeners, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And thanks a lot for sharing with us. Have a good day today. Good luck.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye.